overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
We invite the sound of the bell and the beautiful music that preceded it to take us into a place of resonance, into a field of vibration, knowing that all life is energy. And so as we align ourselves to the diminishing sound of a bell, or to the sound of a guitar, we rest in the silence out of which all sound emerges. We rest at the center of our being, where we begin to feel the energy of life, a life that was never born and a life that will never die. And we place our attention in that vibrational field. When we begin to step out of the finite self, we begin to open to the spaciousness of spirit, if you will. That invisible something in which we abide. It's important to know that we abide in it, as well as it abides within us. But when we allow ourselves to rest in that field of divine love, we begin to experience its frequency. Throughout the month of February, I'm exploring the gifts of love. And this Sunday, I'm speaking on the fire of love. Rumi says, love is a fire, and I am wood. Using the metaphor, he said, and my life can be summed up, I burned, and I burned, and I burned. So, using that metaphor to touch on this longing within the soul, a longing to be revealed, a longing to express, a longing to live, we begin to experience the nature of the divine as love. It says in the book of John, God is love. And when we are loving, we are being godlike. And so we rest in that image, love is a fire. And knowing that feeling very, very well, at age 73, I can say, like a fireplace, once the fire has gone down, we have the smoldering embers. And when my fire at night becomes the smoldering embers, no longer flames, but this radiant heat that is emanating from my wood-burning stove, it is in that holy instant that the pug lies down in front of the fireplace, just like baby Speck did, like baby Bert did. Letting them feel the radiant presence that was once a fire, but now is a smoldering radiant heat that is gentle and calm. And so I invite you to enter into that warmth in this holy instant, shifting the image from a fire to a smoldering ember within your heart, a radiant presence that's within us and all around us. And we come here this Sunday to explore that, to become intimate with this love that we are, a love that bears all things, endures all things, accepts all things as they are. We finished our class, The Awakening World, or rather we have our last class this week. And in that beautiful class, he talks about a note of love that has been struck within the world. And when that note of love within the heart meets the note of love in seeming other, a resonating field is created. Jesus would say it this way, when two or more are gathered, in my name, in my nature, as love incarnate, well, then we potentiate that love, that frequency, that energy of the divine. And then we ponder the consequence of this radiant expression of love. Not as something that is personal, but something extremely impersonal and yet experienced at a deep personal level. And so we open to that this Sunday morning. We get curious about this love as a fire within and all around. We see this as energy that's coming to be embraced so that we might find harmony and balance in this life experience, trading our anxiety for peace, trading our stress for calm, trading our awfulizing for hope. And in this, we choose what seeds we are watering within our consciousness. We are watering the seeds of hope, the seeds of faith. We are watering the seeds of trust that life will give us exactly what we need on this journey. And so we are no longer aiming for some goal outside of ourselves, but we have stopped and we are embracing the moment just as it is. And in that holy embrace, we are graced by the universe with a smile, with a cosmic yes. Yes, this is the life that we all share. I rejoice and am glad in it. When you're ready to play in the playground of the unmanifest, one more Sunday, I invite you to open your eyes, to be here now, to take it from the penguins that all you have is the moment. To know your connectedness to every single thing. I'm excited about teaching a new class in March, and it's going to be based on the book, The Art of Living by Thich Nhat Hanh. He was known by his disciples as Tay, and that's probably good, because if you've ever tried to spell Thich Nhat Hanh, it's a lot of H's, T-H-I-C-H-N-A-H-T-H-A-N-H. I had to really study to learn how to spell that. It's almost like spelling souvlaki or something. And in his in this wonderful book, he explains the Buddhist teaching in such a simple, profound way. And it's so in alignment with what we've just taught with Llewellyn Von Lee in the Awakening the World, which is about seeing through the eyes of oneness, not through the separate self. And can you imagine what life would look like if you realized that God is looking through your eyes? And if God were looking through your eyes, and we're going to take God out of the man in the sky to this divine presence that is everywhere revealed, you know, the sacred within creation. You know, wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. That's because God is looking through your eyes, and it would see everything as a mirror of itself. So Thich Nhat Hanh coined this beautiful phrase, interbeing. He says there's only one life here, as Dr. Ernest Holmes would say, and it's interbeing. And so he would say, if you look at the flower, you don't see an emptiness. It's empty of flower, because what the flower really is it's earth, and it's sunlight, and it's water, and it's air, and it all forms, it's mud. So he says, when you look at the flower, look at the mud out of which the flower grew. And so instead of seeing it as separate, you see it as all an interconnectedness. It's like the net of Indra in Hinduism. Each one of us is a jewel in that net, reflecting back the same beloved presence. And you can see it in Herman so easily. Could we see it in all creation? Could we see it in the humble little penguins? Last night, I love watching National Geographic things, and until they get kind of somewhat violent, you know how that works. And last night, they had the Sahara Desert. And my friend Ron Welch, he did his PhD in meteorology, or whatever he was, I think it was meteorology, on the Sahara Desert, and how it came about because the human species were afraid that there were ghosts in the trees. And so they cut the trees down, and by cutting the trees down, it created the Sahara Desert. And the Sahara Desert in Africa is now the size of the United States of America. Now that's one big desert. What used to be filled with trees and jungles and wild animals is now this vast desert. And so as I'm watching this, I'm watching how some of the macaques, they went to the northern mountains of Morocco and they survived, and yet they are used to the tropical forest, but now you saw the mother macaque with her baby macaque with the snow and the mountains trying to adapt. And then you went back into the desert. Who survived the desert? And there were the zebras. And they were trying to find food in the desert. And as it got painful, I had to turn it off because I can only have so much compassion for the suffering of the planet. And when it gets too big, I have to go back into a place called denial, knowing that all is well. And even though it may not be fun to watch as the desert increases, but could the consequence of watching something like that is that consciousness begins to expand, that we begin to take responsibility. And you know, Richard Attenborough is usually the ones that's narrating this. And he says, I've been doing this for a very long time in my lifetime, hoping that we as a human species will recognize our interconnectedness to all of this and our responsibility to this beautiful planet, not as something separate, as an object, but as our own subjective self. That when you do something to other, you're really doing it to self. And so when I see this seeming suffering of our planet, it's there to awaken compassion within the heart. And then as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, everything is here to awaken the compassion. And so then you understand the Four Noble Truths, that all life is suffering. We suffer because we're caught up in the tyranny of our physical body, first of all. And any of you know it who's getting older, who might have a shoulder or a back or a hip or whatever. And so the first thing he says you meet with this love is your own physical experience. It starts with that. Starts with the bellyache if you've got... wake up in the middle of the night with a tummy ache. And so you bring the attention to the tummy ache and you try to focus on the non-tummy ache when you have a tummy ache. And then something begins to smile. And just by a simple act of meeting the physical suffering, it has a way of just releasing you. It's the most amazing thing to watch. And then Thich Nhat Hanh said, then you can go to the next level of suffering, which so many people have, which is their emotional body. You know that if you've ever been caught up in an emotional issue. So could we meet that emotion in mindful awareness, whatever that might be? Thich Nhat Hanh tells a story of 1966, when he came to America, he was asked to speak at a university. We were in the throes of the Vietnam War. And he said, here's my country where the communists are attacking the capitalists. And here you are a monk, and they want you to take the side, the capitalist over the communist. And if you refuse to take a side, they would exterminate. So he watched the monks and the nuns being killed because they wouldn't choose one side over the other. And so he was trying to create a consciousness of peace, and he was asked to come to America to speak. And this is 1966 in the throes of the Vietnam War, and he's giving a talk, and somebody stood up in the audience says, why don't you go home? Go where you, and he says, take the right side. Take the side of the capitalists instead of saying you don't take a side at all. And so this little monk, why are you here anyway? He went into his heart. Instead of reacting, he said, you know, when you water a tree, you need to water the roots in order to find the root cause if the tree is suffering. And he says, my country, Vietnam, is suffering. And I came to America to find out where are the roots of this war coming from? Because we are being invaded by America. And so after that, he left the room where he was speaking, and the story is that he went out and he was panting and he was upset. And so one of his monks went and he said, "Are you all right?" And he says, "I experienced so much anger, but I knew that if I responded from that anger, that I would be not skillful in my response to the person who was yelling at me from the audience. So I spoke to them from the calmest place that I can, and then I withdrew and I met my anger." And I said, "There you are, my little anger." And it is important when anger arises that you don't repress it, but that you acknowledge it. And so he says, when we are suffering in a relationship with somebody else, he said, instead of running away, it's important if you're in a relationship, you say to your friend, "Michael, I'm suffering. I'm suffering because someone screamed at me and it brought up anger." And then the second thing you say in mindful awareness, you say, "But I'm doing my best. You know, the anger came up, I'm meeting it, but I'm doing my best." And the third most important thing that he said, you turn to your beloved, and you say, "And I need your help. I can't do this alone, Barbara. I need your help. I can't do this alone, Gigi. I need your help." And in that, you're creating this network of the Sangha, of the community, where we can together face the suffering, whatever that might be, in a mindful sort of way. And I'm finding that whatever his message is for me seems so relevant at this stage in life, because there is so much suffering on the planet. And to be able to not turn away from it, then you're bringing the love to whatever life shows you, and that love knows how to embrace it. And it's one breath at a time, one experience at a time, and it's all here for us. So then in his beautiful, painfully simple, but profoundly deep teaching, he says, could we look deeply into everything that arises, if it's the anger that arises? A friend came to me this morning and said there's so much anxiety in their life. Could you meet that anxiety? Not with the idea that I'm going to get rid of it, but know that the nature of anxiety is to run. So when anxiety shows up, "Oh, there you are, my anxiety." It's such a gift to face life as it is. I realize that my sweet beloved husband is afraid. He's afraid because he sees all these people with guns. He sees the way the political world's going on. He hears about Ukraine and the possibility of an attack. He hears the environment and the global issues on the planet. And his flight or fight part of his brain, he wants to run away. Where can we go to escape the potential suffering that we might face here? And I realize it's not helpful if I deny his pain body, because I realize he's doing the best he can and that he is suffering. So could I bring my compassion to his fear, to his concern, and we can face it together, whatever that is that we need to face. You know, one of his issues are the trees and the cutting down of the trees. And we have a couple that's been buying up Five Points, and they bought the house across the street. They cut down all the trees and then they bulldozed the house. And then the house that's next to it, the neighbor came over to me this week and he says, "Well, they bought our house too. They've given us an eviction notice. My wife has stage 4 colon cancer. It's very hard for her. And we have to be out in a month's time." Now, in this particular piece of land, there's a huge tulip poplar that's at least 200 years old. There's some enormous magnolias in the front and some hackberries in the back. And of course, Trey goes into the, "I know what they're gonna do. I know what they're gonna do." I said, "Now just breathe. They haven't been evicted yet. They haven't cut all the trees down yet. But you're awfulizing. You're creating a prison for the future that he lives in. And then of course there's the prison of the past. And could we just be in present moment awareness and face what is, touching whatever arises with compassion, with ever tools that we have in our toolbox?" And so this is Thich Nhat Hanh's simple message, is that that's what all of life's about. And it starts with learning how to breathe consciously. So when anxiety arises, you take a conscious breath and you maybe imagine someone's ringing a bell and you pull into that beautiful still place within yourself that's always there. It's always there. Gigi and Raul visited the Harmonic Egg and they sent me some information on this place in Alpharetta, and I did the research and it sounds exciting. And Bruce Lipton, this scientist, explained how energy healing works. And you realize when we're here at the center, this is an energy healing too. There's love meeting love. There's awareness meeting awareness. hopefully there's a calm person in this person meeting the calm person in you. Now, I could put on anger and anxiety and fear and worry. I mean, they're all, but as I've learned, not to water the seeds of anxiety, not to water the seeds of judgment. Yes, they're in all of us, but I choose to water the seeds of harmony. And so in listening to Bruce Lipton about how energy healing works, he said, we are a culture that seeks medicine. When we're upset, we'll take a pill for that. Maybe that'll make us feel better. We'll get a shot. Maybe you'll feel better. But he said, that maybe only works with 20% because, you know, it's you're talking a physical consumption of some kind of medicine. But he says, energy is instant. And he says, put on some soft music and notice how that makes you feel. You know, as he was saying that, I realized it was 2 years ago that our dog Humphrey had a herniated disc. I remember bringing him into the center, and Bob was here that Sunday, and I thought he was going to be okay, but he couldn't move any of his limbs. He was paralyzed from the neck down. And so it took a week before they could do the, whatever, the CAT scan and then the surgery. And so for a week, I had a paralyzed pug on the floor. Trey's out of town. He was in New England with his sisters. And the one thing that would create harmony within me was I would put this soft, light classical music on, and literally the pug would sleep in his bed. And today when I put that soft music on, he waddles over to his bed and curls up and he goes to sleep. The power of just putting harmonious music on was so significant. So in this beautiful essay or this video thing of Bruce Lipton, he said, energy healing is incredibly powerful. When Lee was talking about his dog Rex on his lap, I realized there's a transmission of love from dog to human and human to dog. What if it's all like that? When you sit under a tree or you go by the ocean, so many people are soothed. I know my beloved Gigi, when she goes and swims in the ocean, it's as if she's gone home. So in Thich Nhat Hanh's simplistic way of looking at it, he says, so focus on the water and know that you are water. And then what kind of water are you? Are you a fetid water that's stagnant, or are you a clear, calm, fluidic water? The water in me meets the water in you. Then he says, look at the fire of the sun, the fire within the soul. You know, is your fire a fire of love, of compassion, of enthusiasm? Or is your fire one that's going to fight like the truckers in Canada to fight for your rights? It's the same fire, but how are you going to use the fire of your soul? He says, focus on the air, because remember, we're all the elements. So what is air? By its very nature, it's everywhere present, like spirit. Air is free, isn't it? It's not bound by one little container. And so could we know ourselves as air, as free, as spirit, as breath? He's inviting us to see ourselves as the mountain, this beautiful earth upon which we live, that we're made out of. We're not separate from this earth. And so when you look at the mountain, or you look at the humble little flower, you can see that the flower is new life emerging. You can see the mountain is solid and strong. And so the mountain in Dave Seberg meets the mountain in David Leonard, and we find that there's one David, which means the beloved, which takes me to the whole premise that there's only one here. And so in the Sufi path, and what we taught in this lovely book, Awakening of the World, he said it's all about lover and beloved. Now the lover is the creation, and the beloved is the creator. And when the creation knows that the creator lives within the creation, well, then we are all the beloved in the multiplicity, the diversity of life, and it's the same presence, it's the same light, it's the same flame, it's the same note of love. And as Rumi said, all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. That means that there's no separate David self from a Chris Meadows. It's the same love in Chris, it's the same love in David, and yet we're in this ocean of love now. And so instead of identifying as the drop, we are the actual ocean. And then what would life look like to know that you are the breath of God, the truth of the universe, unflowering? You are the Buddha consciousness, awakening in this form. You know, they say if you see the Buddha on the side of the road, kill him. The metaphor is it's not separate. It's everywhere, and it's in you. And to know yourselves as that is enlightening. I want to give you a little taste of Llewellyn von Lee at the very end of this book, and then use that as a way to go into a closing meditation, because it is so beautiful, and elucidate, because he explains the light of love that we all are as a transformational light. And in a very practical way, he explains how we can use it in our life and in the world, and how it's about the inner beingness of it all in extremely profound, deep ways. feel the transmission of the teacher to you. He was also one of my teachers. He lives in me. And you know what's very interesting? In the year 2000, he said, I went through a major change. He said, up until then, I was teaching the individual, and I was one of his students, how to awaken the beloved within yourself, that each one of us is an instrument for the divine. He said, but in the year 2000, I came to realize that it's only one life, and that we have to see from the eyes of oneness. It's not about the individual anymore connecting to their divine nature. Yes, that may be a stage, but in truth, it's about the whole planet awakening to its true nature, even the ones that are ignorant. And they may not come for enlightenment, as my beloved daughter says, but they can come to be loved. And the power of that love is transformational. So they don't have to get it here. They can get it in their heart, because the heart knows oneness, whereas the head might want to get caught up in concept and perception. And we have to awaken from all perception that God is separate from us. We're in it. And that's this. Our teaching is what they call a panentheistic teaching. The first night I met Raoul, he talked about panentheism, which says God is within all creation, and yet we're within it. Now that's so much bigger. My God, we're floating in the divine presence, in the divine heart of the one of the universe. It's everywhere revealing itself. That's kind of juicy, isn't it? So here's Llewellyn at the very end of the book with his little epilogue. He says, love is the fire of transformation, and this love is new. It's not the old idea of love. Rumi says, what you think of love are but subtle degrees of domination and servitude ain't love. He says, true love comes fully formed like the moonlight in the window. Could we open to something that's so vast and big and intimate? We've been, you know, when I go to bed at night, the east window has a huge silver moon in it. And when I wake up at 2 a.m, that moon has moved to the west window and it's peeking through the trees. And somehow I seem to be having a relationship with this moon, saying, you know, there's a Hafez says, the sun never says to the moon, you owe me. Figure that one out. The sun never says to the moon, you owe me. This divine presence never says to each one of us as a reflection of that, you owe me. Rather, if we owe it, we owe it to be seen, to let it shine through us, to let God's love shine through our hearts, God's creativity to play through our instrument. So here's Llewellyn. This love is new, and it brings together the worlds in a new way. It's imperative that we come together as one life on this planet. He said, it is a joy that is waiting to be lived. It is the new bud on your own tree of life. Ashley, it's your new bud on your tree of life. You came here to bloom. And Anise Nin says, and when the pains to stay tight as the bud is more painful than to blossom, well, then you'll bloom. So you came here to bloom, and it's the bud. This is this new life. It is the joy waiting to be lived, and it's this new bud on the tree of life in you. And it will touch us in a way that we have not been touched. It will awaken us within a world that is alive with his presence. Now, he's trying to give you a wake-up call here. This something is waking up, and you're going to see this world in a whole new way. It's all you. It's not you manipulating a law to get what you want. There is no you separate from that. So in a way, you have to be so humble to say, I am that, ta twa ma si. I am the very universe awakening in time and space. And I'm here to serve the one, not here to demand that the one serve me. That's a big shift. Every part of life speaks to every other part in a language of love, and we can learn this language. So, my beloved, if you choose to stay here at the Center of Conscious Living, you're going to have to learn the language of love. No, that's a tall order, Sylvia O'Neill. It means you're going to find it in your garden. You know, you're going to find it in the aloneness. And you add a little love to the aloneness, an extra L to aloneness, and you have all oneness. Well, then you're never alone. You're always with the one. Boy, it's a shift. It's a subtle shift, isn't it? And then when you're really alone, I've never been alone. I like what Patrick said, when he was on his tractor, plowing the fields, he was connected to source. He wasn't alone out there feeling sorry for himself. He was feeling truly connected, inspiring. So he said, we can see the patterns of love as they're present in life. Look to life, it's showing you the patterns. That's why I love watching nature shows. You know, they take care of their eggs and their chicks. The penguins will, mother and father will go and swim and come back so that they can take care of their one little, and they know their chick. And when it cries out, they know the cry. How sweet is that? It's a nurturing environment. Could we be a part of that? And you know, if you see it, it's because you got it. We can see the patterns of love as they're present in life. These are the signs of the beloved revealing herself in her creation. Isn't that sweet? To see the divine presence revealing herself. It's not a conceptual head trip anymore. It's not an enlightened concept. You see love everywhere. How I saw this thing on the bumblebees and how they pick a flower to drink from the flower. So that in essence, they're pollinating the flower. But they also take refuge in the flower. And when it's cold and the petals of the flower close up, the bumblebee sleeps in the flower because it keeps it warm. But when the bumblebee wants to mate, he has to find a lovely female also in a flower. And what there's two bumblebees wanting to mate with the same female. And so they fight for the female. And in their fighting, the female falls out of the flower and they miss the whole experience. And then you find yourself laughing. But it's nature showing you. It's nature showing you how it all works. To participate in these changes, we must leave behind any pattern of spiritual isolation that might separate us from life or from each other, or any image of hierarchical spiritual ascent. Tell that to the cardinals in the Vatican. He says we've got to let go of that old-time religion of God as separate and this hierarchy that some are enlightened and some are the peasants. So our beloved is not a solitary inner figure, but rather is a dynamic field of oneness that embraces the seen and the unseen worlds. Now he's inviting us to stretch our perception, to let go of that old-time religion that we were all raised with, you know, a God that will kill the world and give us a rainbow. Get rid of that God. As Meister Eckhart says, you have to kill God to know God. And what he's saying is you have to eradicate this limited idea of a Santa Claus God that has a to-do list of the goods and the bads, and experience an intimate love that is everywhere, revealing yourself. They call it the Great Spirit in the indigenous cultures. So he said, to live his oneness rather than focusing slowly on our own individual inner journey, then we have to consciously recognize that we're part of an interdependent whole. That's that inner beingness, that there's one life and it's all interconnected. We inner are. You do it to one, you do it to everything. So patterns that restrict our unconditional openness to his presence will limit our ability to transmit his love. Where are you blocked? He's asking the question, where are you blocked to this direct transmission of divine love, to divine light? You know, when Kelly walks in here, she's lit up from within. She actually shines. And I know it's not her. The something that is her shines through her. Could we experience that with each other, that light that doesn't know separateness? And then you hear all the great world's traditions. Be a light unto yourself, the Buddha said. Nur ala nur, light upon light, it says in the Quran. Don't put your light under a bushel, said Jesus, but let it shine. Now they're talking about this Shekinah, this light within all creation. And we're here to access it and to feel it. It lights up the dark places. So here we go. It's called the we consciousness, living the note of love. I've turned the fire of love into the smoldering embers of love, and now he takes it into a note of love. Living the note of love will take us to the edge of our own self, into the destiny of the life and the light within our heart. When we can tap into that, do what you love, the money will follow is a wonderful book to read. You know, what is it that you really love? Could you offer your life in service to that? He said, we will see how these things are part in each other, are part of each other, how the light needs the darkness, and how we are also the darkness. And we will sense that something new is coming into being within us, and something new is coming into being within the world. We might call it a new level of consciousness. Barbara Marx Hubbard called it the Homo Universalis, the universal human. The Hopi Indians said, we are the ones that we've been waiting for. So could we take this personally and say, this universe wants to experience itself in oneness through its creation, and we're that creation, and we come together in a community, in a sangha, to support each other in that realization, self-realization. Lastly, he says, every breath is the breath of the beloved. Not just your breath, but every breath is the breath of the beloved. Wow. So then who's breathing you? That's why it's so simple. It's just about stopping and turning into a conscious breath. And you know, the breath, it never abandons us. Have you noticed that? It's not, we're not breathing, it's breathing us. And to just stop all your efforting, all your struggling, and just take refuge in a simple breath. Breathing in, I breathe in, yes. Breathing out, I smile. Yes to present moment, whatever it is. And I smile, I accept it for what it is. And in that acceptance, compassion flowers, awareness flowers. What we might call a bad thing isn't really a bad thing, Marie Perez, it's just a thing. And then you make a beautiful warm dinner and you nurture yourself throughout all of that. You recognize life as it is, you become intimate with it, you allow it, and you nurture. You nurture the moment. So here's how he concludes this lovely book. Every day, every moment, we have to say yes. Yes to our beloved, and yes to this one life that we all share. It is his life. It is God's life. It is perfect. Ernest Holmes, there is one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. So humbly, he said, but it's all God's life. He's saying the same thing. Every moment, say yes to God's life. And this is the primal yes that we celebrate his presence in our life and his presence in the world. And we are not here to change the world and fix the world like so many think. But we're here to experience this world through the eyes of revelation. This too is good. This too is for God. Emma Curtis Hopkins, and I demand to see the blessing. And so sometimes things have to fall apart. That's the chaos theory. So that there's a new ordering of the way we look at things. And thank God that things fall apart so we can begin to see things with fresh eyes. My prayer partner was talking, we were talking about racism in America. And he said he watched a documentary on how in America, they created the white race, how we were superior to the other races. And he said, it's painful to see how we went down that path, and now we're experiencing the consequences of considering ourselves a privileged race, when in truth, it was all some limited idea that came at a time when we were in a limited consciousness. So he's saying, let go of those old ways of thinking. We are not here to change the world. And then we will see that it is already changing. Boy, it's changed so much in my one lifetime. And what most people imagine as life is just the fading images of a previous era. You know, I grew up when gays were condemned by the church and by so many people. And I was a young man when they had that Vietnam War, that we were told that if we let Vietnam fall to communism, that we would have what they call the domino effect, which is an erroneous way of looking at things. But they used it as a doctrine for us to have a war where thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands, died senselessly. And when people would start to say, this war is not right, and it was my generation, you were condemned by the powers that be. And so what if it takes those people that have the courage to stand up to ignorance, the women that said, we need the right to vote, whether the male, white male race wants to give it to us or not, we're gonna fight for our right of enfranchisement. Isn't that wonderful? It's been 100 years now that women have had the right to vote. Thank God. Can you imagine the mess our country would be in without their vote? I'm just saying. Looking through the pattern of conditioning, we see a dying world, which is destroying itself with greed and pollution. But yet, through the eyes of revelation, this is the shift, through the eyes of revelation, we will see a new world that's forming amidst these shadows. You know, I'm really hopeful. They have electric cars now. That can run on electricity. They have wind turbines. You know, we don't have to live off fossil fuels for the rest of our life. Isn't it nice to know that something is waking up? There's sustainable living that we can find. They have soy products for almost every kind of meat, so we don't have to be a meat-based culture. We can actually find healthy foods out there that will be good for our body. You know, we're learning how to use energy now to create harmony and homeostasis within our system. And I think that's wonderful. A new kind of energy, a new kind of healing. And he says, this is the eyes of revelation. So through this yes, this is the last bit, we claim our right to see with the light of a new consciousness, to experience what is being born here on planet Earth. Did you realize that you're the leading edge of consciousness? I mean, isn't it nice to know that we're not clinging to that old way of usurping the planet as an object to be taken advantage of, like the Sahara Desert. You saw what happened there, but rather to see the sacredness of this beautiful planet, of the water, of everything. So he said, and then in a moment, both so simple and yet so extraordinary, we will realize that we are what is being born. This new consciousness is what is being born. You're giving birth to your new soulful, awakened self. His oneness is the center of life within all creation, and you are making it a priority within your own life. This life isn't about you. It's about this divine love shining through you. And the mystery of life happens in every moment for each one of us. All you have is the present moment. Thich Nhat Hanh was doing a retreat, and this man said, I'm so busy with my life, I don't have any time to be with my son or my wife because I'm working all the time, and then I've got to do the work when I get home and the old chores. And he says, what if every moment of your life you were mindful? So when you wash dishes, you're mindfully washing dishes. It's not a chore to be done. It's a sacred cleansing. He said, you know, in Plum Village, you know, in my country, he says, we did not have running water. We had to gather water. He says, we did not have soap, so we would use the ashes from the fire to clean the pots. And he says, before we would clean them, we would have to boil the water with the wood. And when we would run out of wood, we would go to the forest and get the pine needles. And he said, and everything was sacred. You begin to see, you don't have to have running water and hot water on the tap and beautiful soap and the drudgery of washing dishes. He says, but you can make it your mindfulness practice. Everything then becomes a yes. It's not a chore. It's a dance. So he goes on to say this, we are the center of the circle. We are our beloved revealing himself anew. This beloved is awakening within us. So he said, this is the last sentence, our beloved has called us out of forgetfulness into the remembrance that he needs us to bring his light into the world. We're moving out of forgetfulness, Raul, to the bell, and we're moving into remembrance that it's all him. Forgetting and remembering. Isn't it simple? We've forgotten that it's all God, and now we're remembering that it's all God. Now, it's not a God that's the separate God that we've grown up with like Santa Claus. It's the God that permeates all creation. It's the God of your own beingness. It's the God of the universe. Raoul's gonna ring the holiness bell, the mindfulness bell, and we smile. And we say yes. We say yes to this present moment. And as we say yes, we discover the stillness, the silence. It says in the Bible to be still and know that I am God. So there's a huge hint. And we're here to catch the hints, to just be still. And in that stillness, we know this I am, which is the name of God to Moses, is all there is. The I am is smiling from the trees, from the penguins, from the moon and the stars, the one life. And we witness it. It says in the Quran, when you remember him, he remembers you. So when you remember this divine loving presence, it begins to awaken within its creation, and you and I are that creation. That is the remembering part. We forget it when we get caught up in our egoic me self, when we run around with our tale of woe from the past, which is the prison in which we live, one of self-righteous resentment, or we get caught up in the prison of a future idea that becomes a fantasy or an imagined something or other. When we let that just fade away, well, then present moment awareness can flower, just like the petals of a flower opening. And then we are alive in the breath. And then like the flower, we can experience the bumblebee drinking from our nectar. And we can realize that we're not separate from the bumblebee, that we are drinking the nectar of the divine in every moment, and yet we are the nectar of the divine offering itself through our open heart to the world. And so we get to drink from each other's well of love, metaphorically. And we smile when two or more are gathered in the nature of divine love. Well, then divine love begins to expand. We don't just have it with our dog sitting on our lap, but we smile at the robin, at the bird feeder, or at the bird bath. In my case, the birds come to the dog bowl, and they decided that they can take a bath in that because it's everybody's bowl. It's not just for the dogs. And so I smile at the robins as they splash in the dog bowl, letting me know that there's equanimity in love, that love doesn't have a hierarchy or a lowerarchy, but that it's all good and it's all God, and it's all coming to be recognized. It says in the Quran, am I not your Lord? To which we say, yes, we witness you. And so we go through life bowing to the sacred moment, seeing this presence revealing herself everywhere anew, awakening to its potential and possibility, not only within us, but all around us. And as we see the good in the world, we literally call it forth. As we see the potential and possibility, we are inviting that new way of seeing to move into manifestation, whatever that might want to look like. A world living in harmony with one another, energetically, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. And then we say to life, I am here for you. I am here for you, this beautiful life. How may I serve you? How may I bring my compassionate heart, smoldering with love, to each moment of suffering and struggle that I meet along the way, so that I might embrace each moment as my own moment, not as something foreign or other, but as my own self. And so we rest in that connection, in that inner beingness. I invite you to see the net of Indra, which is in Hinduism what they talk about the world as, this interconnected net where every intersection there is a jewel, and every jewel is a soul reflecting every other soul, and it's the one life in this network of love reflecting back the light, the presence, the possibility, and that beautiful mindful awareness, that Buddha consciousness, which is fully awake, so filled with the Christed energy of divine love. Wheresoe'er I look, I see the face of God. And in that holy instant, the beloved is revealed on earth as it is in heaven, in the finite as well as it is in this infinite spacious field in which we abide. So I invite you to touch your heart, feel that connection to oneness, to each other, to the beating heart of the universe, the one heart, the heart of God. And let's say to this beloved presence that we share, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the emerging presence of love within my heart. On fire with possibility. Smoldering with sincerity. Ready to burn away all the nafs. Ready to set me free. To be the love that knows no other. That sees the possibilities unfolding. Where love awakens in the heart of humanity, and we see only one here. May this reverberate throughout the universe as we arrive in the holy instant of now, and we establish ourselves at home. At home in the One who knows no other. So with playful curiosity, open your eyes. Let yourself be done. It's fun. It's kind of like a catalyst. Once the love starts to work, it doesn't stop. Thank you for sending in your tithes. And if you're interested in the new class, there's a sign-up sheet. It's called The Art of Living Thich Nhat Hanh. And we also have a Wednesday Night Live thing at 6 o'clock, 6 to 7, where we kind of connect in the Sangha. So those are both available to you. Be safe. I'll see you next week.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.